Hi, this is Greggy Morwich. Isn't that a surprise? I was sitting here at my desk, and I don't know why, but I started to think about little boys peeing. Since I was a little boy peeing at one point, it was last week, no, 2 weeks ago. But I was thinking of what I was going to say to a writer if I wasn't going to write the story about that or whatever, what I would use as an example. Say, listen, I'm not going to write the book. I'm going to task you to do it, and then I'll pay you, and then I'll mark it up. I'll call it my own, and I'll sell it. Of course, I don't do that, but some people do. And I was thinking of some of the parameters, and I thought, you know, there are certain rules and regulations that are based on observation and experience, and we all use these things, like, well, I'm very good at driving a bus because I drive a bus. And I'd say, well, how do you know, are you a good bus driver? And you say, well, of course I'm a bus driver. Well, do you have any way of, you know, explaining to me why you're a good bus driver? Well, yes, I drive very slowly, and I don't make jerky stops, and I don't accelerate too much because otherwise it's sort of like water in a pan. If you move the pan real fast, the water stays there and goes out on the floor. And if you have one and you happen to be moving it and you stop, it goes out the other end. Well, that's what happens with a bunch of people in a bus when you stop and you go, and they go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I, in my early years, I found that entertaining, but you know, I'm in my 50s now or whatever it is, and I don't do that. I say, oh, well, that makes sense. Anything else? Yeah, when I first started out, it's a municipal bus, and I'm going down the highway. It's a four-lane road. But I'm going 45 miles an hour, whatever it is, and then there's a bus stop, and you have a number of choices, which is you can pull off, but then that takes the bus and it leans to the right, and everybody that's in the bus finds themselves sliding across the seat, and then everybody, it's like a boat, everybody slides to the right, and then the bus gets a little heavy on the right hand side. You know, it's sort of like if you have think about a ferry boat captain. You know, he's a little reluctant to turn around and say, listen, everybody to the starboard side. And then the ferry tilts to the right. And he goes, never mind, distribute yourself equally across the boat, please. And you say, well, I'd like to sit with my wife. I'm sorry, no, you go to that side, you go to that side. Well, anyway, I started thinking about... I was thinking about me at first, you know, when I was like 5 to 7 years old, and a typical 5 or 7 year old boy has no idea how to control his faucet, and we get distracted very well. So and the mother and father have agreed that the boy's getting old enough, but not quite. You know, he's like 5 years old, six, whatever it is, and has reasonable control. In other words, let's say 1 out of 10. You know, well, last week it was, he couldn't do it at all. You know, dear, let's celebrate. You know, he actually hit the toilet. Fantastic, let's have a party. Dads are prone to do that. Dads are also not prone to go in the bathroom with their son because they don't want to touch his faucet. For obvious reasons. So what they do is the fathers stand behind the sun, sometimes the moon, but they stand behind the sun and make sure the faucet's pointed that way and then turn the boy. So, you know, if you hear splashing and you don't hear water, you kind of guide to the right or guide to the left. And then, you know, to consider the, you know, once that's taken care of, you know, you already have a piece of toilet paper in your hand, you reach around and you say, here, dry off your, yes, yeah, nice dab like that, uh-huh. And don't do that too often because you're not old enough for that yet. Now throw it in the toilet. They say if you wash your stuff too much, you're having too good a time and you spend too much time in the shower. Well, anyway, then you discover girls and you still do it, but you invite the girls into the shower. Well, anyway. Now, the mothers, if the father's lazy, no, dear, you take him in the bathroom. Well, mothers don't know how to stand behind them and go back and forth like this, because they sit, and men, when they pee, normally don't. I mean, if you're pooping at the same time, you know, why wipe up, stand up, turn around, and you know what I'm saying? It gets kind of awkward, particularly in the military. When I was in the military, the bathrooms in Germany didn't have any dividers. The toilet was there, and they were all in a row. And when you went in there, now, you know, there's protocol, which means if a person who outranks you, particularly an officer, comes in the room, you stand up. But there's a clause in the protocol book for peeing and pooing that state that if somebody outranks you, you know, if you're a sergeant like I was, and then your lieutenant walks in, you don't have to stand up. Now, some are more demanding than others, but usually they get court-martialed for that. So the officer doesn't have to go in the bathroom and say, listen, please don't stand. You know, you get a real disaster if you do that. And then what they do, you know, officers are much more, they go, there are two different camps. One is they make a lot of noise and make a big deal out of being naked from the waist down, sitting and making terrible sounds and ruin the atmosphere. Officers don't like to do that. That's the one side of the camp. The other side of the camp is they make a whole thing about it. You know, as a matter of fact, they hold it until the last minute so they can race in, drop everything, and try and destroy the toilet. And then they wait for you to complain. Assuming that person knows that there's nobody that outranks him. Now, if there happens to be a lieutenant colonel in there, and he just happens to be young to be that old and that rank, and a lieutenant goes in there and pulls one of those, then there's a kind of a silence. And then there's the traditional flush. And then the officer stands up, and the lieutenant realizes that's a lieutenant colonel. Now, the lieutenant has an option to apologize and say, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were in here when I did that. And the lieutenant colonel says, am I to understand that if you have people below your rank, that justifies what you did when I was in there? Gets very awkward after a while. Well, anyway, the mother takes the son in, and since she's not used to, you know, particularly her husband, I kind of doubt, unless it's part of the game, you know, hey, listen, before we get down to business, can I come around and hold your faucet so when you pee, that'll turn me on, and then I'll turn you around the other way, and I'll grab you by the things under there, and I'll bring you over to the bed, and then I'll attack you. And would you like to play that game? I mean, you know, different strokes for different folks. Literally. Well, anyway, she doesn't have him take his faucet through the zipper, assuming there is one. It's many ways it's better just to drop everything and then point the sun. Part of the problems that the men have is that the sun is liable to trip over his own pants. So there's usually a ritual beforehand where the father says, look, this is a zipper, and then he goes through all the details, And then you just kind of take your little thingy and you kind of point and you hold on to it and stuff like this. That's until the kid, you know, leans back and the faucet goes back into the pants and now the pants are soaked. And the son expects to be rewarded for that. Which is, look, I did exactly what you told me to do and look what I did. What's mom going to say? We're not going to tell mom. I'll tell you what, you just kind of stand here. I'll go get some new underwear and pants. And then the kid does what kids do. See, the father has taken off the pants and the underwear. The kid's wet. And appropriately throws it in the sink. And he says, wait here, I'm going to go get you some clean stuff. And we're going to kind of give you a light wash, and then you'll kind of dry off. And just don't move, just stay there. Well, kids don't listen very well. So the father goes past the mother on the way to the washer and dryer. Right behind him is the little boy with no pants. Hi, Mom. Father stops and looks at mother, and mother looks at father. No games until Thursday. Well, anyway, the mother is smarter. The pants and the underpants come down, if not taken off prior to the aiming. Which is very smart, but mothers with a lot of time to spare, you know, will remove everything. Just hold on to mom here, just face me here, and we'll take this off, and we'll put it over here, and then we'll turn you around, and we'll point you to the toilet. Well, mothers are not as trusting of say, 7-year-old faucets. So mothers are compelled to take control of the situation. So they reach around and they aim. And then they kind of move the boy up to the toilet and that works pretty well. Honestly, it really does, you know. I mean, it's a lot more complicated, but that works. And normally mothers stop doing that when the little boy reaches maybe 10, 12, 16 maybe. They don't stop doing it. They it's not that they don't have the inclination. They find a girlfriend and they say, listen, you know my son. Yeah, you know, he's kind of nice guy and everything. You're just in the game to play. I don't want to do it anymore. And besides, you probably might have a general interest. You might want to talk him into something else, you know, and then maybe you'll get married and have children. And then I don't have to explain to my mother why he hasn't had any children. Anyway, so I thought that was important. That's a very important story. The second story, so that I can make this much longer, is that I was a skier. Well, I was more than a skier. I actually had worked now and then. And but anyway, I was in Fieberbrunn, Austria. I was in the military. I was in the Wiesbaden American Ski Club, WASKI. And, you know, you usually overdress for skiing, which brings peeing into, like, for instance, you'll notice that men skiing don't drink beer before they go skiing. Need I say more? What they do is they go skiing and they perspire, okay? That means they don't have to pee as much. So they ski longer and they don't have to go take off all this paraphernalia. Or a lot of the ski pants back then didn't have flies. No, they had caterpillars and they had bees and never mind. But it was bad. Then they drink beer, okay? But then they usually, it's called après skiing, which means after you've been on the slopes all day, particularly in the Europe society. I was in Fieberbrunn in Tyrol, 67 and 68. And 69. No. 69 I got out of the service and went home at Christmas. So obviously I didn't go skiing. But anyway, après skiing was very popular, and Fieberbrunn was a very, I would ski Lermos and St. Johann and a number of others, but Fieberbrunn was so, it's just a wonderful little town, and Thursday the kids, they only go to school half a day. Then they go on the ski slopes in the afternoon. So it's part of the curriculum. It was back then. And then I was a pretty strong intermediate skier, so I'm skiing along. It's a nice flat spot. And I hear this roaring behind me, and about 16 kids come racing around me on either side. What they call shush booming. And right on by, and they're skiing backwards, and they're doing backflips and front flips, and they're throwing each other around and still going. And I felt very insecure, and very, it's sort of like, you know, a man, when he gets older, realizes that part of his anatomy gets longer, and some of his anatomy gets shorter. You know, everybody finds that out, I would say between 95 and 97 years old, perhaps. But by then, you lose interest. And so does everyone else. So, it doesn't matter. Well, anyway, you figure out a way so that if you're caught on the slopes and you have to be with a friend, and this is an amusing story, you're going to like this. You can manage. I wouldn't do it in the middle of a snowstorm or in 3 feet of snow, particularly light powder. But you can kind of find the equipment, find a way to get it out, and kind of. But then a new game comes up. It's called Running Your Name in the Snow. I love this story. Well, now I'm going to figuratively jump around and give it, not necessarily that particular event, but imagine that there are two skiers, and one is named, they decide they're going to write their name in the snow. So Sam takes out his toys, and he writes S-A-M. And he's very proud, and the other guy's watching the snow and says, oh, you know, and he takes out his equipment, and he writes his name in the snow. And Sam looks down and goes, that's a funny name. What is it? See, that's the first three letters of Gregory. Isn't that funny? So let's assume it was me. and people started calling me Gruh. Are you Gruh? Yeah. Did you see me write my name in the snow? That's about it for this recording. It just hit me. It's 1:27 in the afternoon. It's kind of a gray day. It's in December. Christmas is coming up. And I'm kind of getting lazy. I did a couple of pieces of artwork. I did a Merry Christmas for my son-in-law and my daughter. It's Mike and Beth. Happy Merry Christmas and stuff. And I made a couple of hearts across the top. And when I was doing the art, I thought it was going to be a heart. And then it didn't turn out to be a heart. It kind of turned out to be, look more like a cookie. So when my daughter comes over to get it, to take it home, she's gonna say, well, what's with the hearts? I'm going to say, you know, they don't look like hearts to me. And I would say, and I've already practiced, I'm going to say, they're cookies. And then she's going to say, well, you did a very good job of cookies. I said, do you want me to? And I'll say, would you like me to tell you the truth? And she says, why now? I did them like that. And then I thought, what are those? And I would say to my daughter, I knew you were coming and you were going to ask me what they were. So I tried to think about what they looked like. And I decided they looked like cookies. So now that you're here and you're looking, then I'm going to tell you they're cookies. Do you like the cookies I did? I'm very good at doing cookies, don't you think? That's called rationalization. Anyway, it's also 2024. And, you know, these are awkward times because we're switching administrations. And I was watching a show yesterday with, Steve, what, there was a show, let's see, Charlie Kirk was on first, then I think it was, what's his name, anyway, and then Ben Carson, and then Steve Bannon came on, and Steve Bannon was, I mean, you talk about power, and it was in Arizona, I think, and all the whole area was filled with people who had volunteered, and they were all part of the team, and this was kind of a celebration. I think Charlie Kirk started it or something like that a number of years ago. These are remarkable people. The stories were absolutely remarkable. The other one's named Ben, too. I don't know his name. The Jewish fellow wears a yarmulke and talks like a staccato, like a machine gun. Ben, not Ben Stiller. it's another story. But Steve Bannon, as he was talking, I mean, he was really powerful. And he really laid it on the left, the deep state and central banking and everything. I mean, he really went after them. And Steve Bannon had spent 4 months in jail because of the deep state and the remarkable government that is in position of a real government. And he said, and I've been thinking, I thought of it right from the beginning, but he said that the government of Biden and stuff, that's an illegitimate administration. So everybody associated with it is illegitimate, which if you assume it can be proven at some point that they cheated liberally and took over the government and pushed a properly elected president and moved him out of the way and took over the government and subjected the people of the United States to sheer horror, at the gas pump and, in conversations and wokeism and counterculture, no, not counterculture, cancer culture and all that crap. And now all the pardons and everything like that, you know. I think Biden's capable of pardoning, you know, can you imagine him? Pardon me, pardon you. Pardon me, can you move please? Pardon me. Who wants to get pardoned? Stand in front of me. Pardon. Anyway, what's going to happen is, and I kind of thought about it, he didn't say it, but this government, through these 4 years, are going to be declared controlled by an illegitimate government. And not only, and when that happens and the people agree, and the proof is there, then these people are going to be facing treason and worse. And, dangling around comes to mind, but I don't know. You know, a lot of them are going to be tried under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and I am familiar with that. And that's what keeps men who gave their word that they were going to die for the country or live for the country or whichever comes first. And we take an oath, and that oath means something to us, the veterans, the real ones. The oath that these other people took is an illegitimate government. No wonder they don't pay attention to the Constitution. No wonder the oath doesn't mean anything. But unfortunately, when they're standing in front of a tribunal, it makes a difference. Also, a long time ago, I thought that Trump, I was listening to a report on, what was it? It was x22report.com with Dave. I listen to it all the time. I think I want to put him in for a Citizens Award when this is all over. He's working on his like 3,000th whatever it is episode, and he's got a lot of clarity. He's a very good guest, and one of the guests was a guy with a cowboy hat that knew all the chapter and verse of the Constitution, and pointed out about the military, and about he gave it a name of a wartime president, that if anybody takes over the government and it ceases to serve the people, that the military is obliged. By the way, the military is not part of the government. It's a separate, it's like a contractor. In the sense that the military can't do its job if it's part of the institution. It has to have objective view, associated by agreements and oaths and codes and everything else. And it's occupied and run and populated by citizens, soldiers, citizens. But anyway, he said that this guy that was on there with the cowboy hat said that if the government can't run itself and the people are suffering, that the military can come in and take over. It's not martial law. It's taking over, and they arrest everybody, and then they put their own people in charge of all the places that they took all the people out of, and they're now all in jail or in custody. And but it's not a government, it's not a military takeover. The mandate is at that particular point, and they also go around the president. If the military feels at a certain point that the president has been taken out of circulation, or no president is in that position, they go in and do it right around the president. In other words, they have a temperature gauge that when it reaches a certain temperature, the military goes off. It doesn't matter who, and nobody can get in the way, including the president. And they go in and take over. Now, the president stands at the side, let's assume, but he's a wartime president. In other words, he's been replaced by a fake president, but he's known as a wartime president. Just like in Norway, the king and queen and stuff in World War II, they went to England. They left and they governed from England because they knew that they were just going to be pulled out and shot, and then there was nobody to anyway. You get the idea. Then the military automatically, right then and there, will go to a given department where they've taken someone away, and the first instinct they do is they say, who would like to take over this department? They look at the second and the third person, and then you look at everybody else, and they say, everybody else say, yeah, that would be fine. So then they have someone who is sitting in the chair, who is a military, who gets up, and then the person who's chosen or selected sits down, and then that officer leaves, turns it back over. If the president is removed, and I mean quotes removed, and God didn't turn his head, but they will have an election. They'll put a military person in there as a military governor or literally a military president to hold the position down until there's an election, and then that officer leaves and the right person takes over. But they can also recruit somebody, and it's my belief that the military saw that it was going to happen. All their information and intelligence said that the American government is going to be taken over, and they were going to cheat an election, which means that there was no, at that point, no military attack. It would be proven, it would be a treasonous takeover of the government by a bunch of people who are still Americans, and it doesn't involve any other countries and stuff like that. But I think the military went to Trump and recruited him and said, we can't take over because all the people will think this is a military takeover. So we have to do this in a subtle fashion. We have to be ready to come in, but would rather not. and you're a civilian, you're not a politician, and you seem to be, you know, would you consider being president? Now, what they did was, the military can't cheat, so they can't rig the election opposite. What they can do is, they, because of their intelligence network, they decided that Hillary is going to lose. If there was somebody against her, that individual, if he or she lasted long enough, was able to keep going, that Hillary would get overconfident and she would, she might get the popular vote, but she would lose the you know what I'm talking about, the college. That's exactly what happened. Hillary got the popular vote and Trump got the college vote and he became president in 16. But they knew perfectly well that 20 was going to be a problem. So there was a contingency program, which was, let's see what happens, because we know that the left is, they're a bunch of crazy people. They're going to continue to harass Trump and do everything to try and get him out of there, because they just can't accept the fact that they lost. And they lost because of their own simplicity, and it wasn't really a strategy. They were overconfident. The military took advantage of that. And fortunately, it worked, and Trump got in. And legally. In other words, it was all done above board. In 20, the left wanted to make sure that they got in this time, so they cheated. And the military said, it's still civilian. So they had to back up. So they said to the elected president, the Constitution says that you're a wartime president, which means you're still going to be president, but we can't take out the illegitimate people, because the people of the country will still think that we took over and we arrested the people who won. So they had to wait 4 years. And during that 4 years, the deep state and everybody proved that they're crooked and proved that they had taken over and proved that they were trying to destroy America and proved that they were working with other countries. Until they got to this point where, when the people became aware of it, had a red wave, and Trump got in, and you know, he got everything, which is where we are now. So now the illegitimate government is failing, and these people are, you know, they're pardoning. Biden didn't even show up. Kamala Harris, who knows where she is? You know, who's running the country? I'll tell you who's running the country. Trump is running the country, and the military is behind it, and he's the commander-in-chief. And the fake government, you can see it's fake and illegitimate because they're not doing anything. It's controlled by the deep state, which is international, and central banking, you know, the World Economic Forum, whatever, you know. And you can see what they're doing at the end of that administration. They're pardoning everything. Pardoning. What they're doing is they're bringing to light all the people that need to be protected. Now they're after Trump gets in, they're gonna attack, investigate, and arrest most likely all the people on the list, but they didn't compile it. The deep state did. 1,500 people here, 2,000 people there, Hunter Biden, you know, everybody else is getting pardoned. They don't realize that they're putting them on a hit list. For cash and Bondi, whatever her name is, they're going to get these people nailed to the floor. Well, that floor might fall away underneath their feet. That's a possibility. You know, the Uniform Code of Military Justice is pretty firm on You know, it's very interesting. The rule of thumb is, if you're an agent and you're caught and you're in uniform, or you get removed, this happened in World War II. You stayed in your uniform, and you were caught in your uniform, and then you're incarcerated, and you're judged, and you're told you're going to be executed. They put you in front of a firing squad. That's considered the honorable way to die, even though it's an opponent, like a general or something, anybody. And if the agent is in civilian uniform and has been treasonous and has been an agent, then they hang him. That's the distinction. That doesn't mean you can't be in jail forever. But the military basically can't carry truckloads of prisoners as they advance on the field. And I don't want to go any further into that. Finding Private Ryan, the most unbelievable movie ever made about military. I mean, getting off the ship and going up to beaches, it staggered me. And then the rest of the story was just, I was riveted. It's unbelievable, the acting, the plot, the situations, just amazing. I'm putting this on the end because that's the situation I'm in while I'm laughing about little boys peeing and how serious the situation is, and the fact that I saw it last night. And since it's my show and my website, and I'm Greggy Morwicks, and I'm also Greg, and I'm also Gregory, and I own the company, and I'm president, and I work in the company, and I created the website, I wrote all the books, I did all the covers. I'm the one-man band. I'm looking at the new Hollywood, you know, Hollywood 2 with Mark Wahlberg and so forth and so on. I have some ideas on that. I'm waiting for them to discover that I have some interesting ideas. They're already looking into me a little bit. Maybe they'll use me, maybe they won't. But if they do, it'll be fun. And I have a few ideas. If they don't, that's fine too. You know, being 80 years old, I don't need to get into anything, but, you know, I'm a patriot. You know, if you know, Hollywood has totally failed us. Now they're all going to jail or being shamed or going to other countries or whatever. I think I could help them straighten that out. And, you know, particularly if Canada is going to become 51, Mexico 52, and God knows France is going to be 53. And then Trudeau is going to try to talk to Elon into sending him to Mars because he's not going to be able to live on this planet. Anyhow, with this in mind, you know, every once in a while, you know, I said to my daughter, she said, you know, you ought to call yourself Greggy Morwicks the Rambler because you ramble. And being my daughter and my other daughter, who was nodding her head, they know I ramble. They were kind of raised that way. I think they're fed up with me by the time they were about, I don't know, maybe about 11 or 12, they were done with me. You know, they went off in another tangent, you know, a different way. It's been interesting. But this particular one, Beth, that's the older one with her husband, Mike, and she looks out for me and my wife. My wife's disabled and lives with them, so I'm a happy hermit. It's worked out. It's worked out reasonably well, you know. But I use the Greggy Morwicks Show also as my own personal therapy under my real therapist, the Lord Jesus. And that's who I really listen to and who helped me over the years try and shorten my sentences and make them more meaningful. and straighten up my act, sort of, kind of, in a way. And every once in a while, I get something funny like this, and I put it in as a show. I just did one about AI. I did two about AI. You know, take the fear out of something that's not threatening. You know, AI is so simple to explain and understand, and I have a way of, an idea of how to not use all the electricity in the country to support AI. Because I'm an artist and writer, and I know how to put those things together. And industry using AI is very expensive. But in the creative world, it doesn't necessarily have to add to the burden. And I know how to do that. Or at least I have an idea how to do that. So we'll see. But since I'm kind of whimsical and 80, and it's funny, somebody was talking about 80, I was listening to somebody, it wasn't a stand-up comedian, but it was an analyst of some sort, said that you make your excuses to everybody up until you're 80. And everybody challenges you and questions you and everything up to 80. Then after at 80 plus, all they do is gather for celebrations of birthdays, because there aren't that many. Ordinarily not expensive. You know, what does Grandpa need? I don't know. Where is he? Well, he's down by the creek, I think. Hope he didn't fall in, y'all. But, you know, Grandma got run over by a reindeer. Grandpa and me, whatever it is. That was a feeble attempt at Christmas carols. So I'm going to sign off. I thought this would be fun, and you'd enjoy this. And I'm going to keep doing it. The Great Morby showed a lot of fun this way. People are discovering it more and more now. People are talking about, you know, turning it into a blog and going on social media. I don't think so. It's too rambling. I don't know why anybody would listen to me. You know, like Dan Bongino and stuff like that. You know, this guy's on for like an hour and a half, and it's intense. You know, he's an intense man, and most likely should be in charge of the Secret Service. Mallorca, not Mallorca, whatever his name is. He's an automaton. He's not a real man. He is truly a robot, and they programmed him to be a total failure to us, and a total success for the deep state, so that they can fill us up with all kinds of migrants and stuff like that. I listened to him be quizzed in Congress. He has no personality. He's completely mechanical, completely programmed. Well, anyway, I let whimsy take over now and then. So I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sitting here in my 650 square foot Garden of Eden in a box, because and you know from the rest of the website what my Garden of Eden in a box looks like, and I'm perfectly happy here. I don't know if going to Nevada and helping out Hollywood 2 with Mark Wahlberg would be a good idea or not. That's if they get me involved. If they don't, that's perfectly fine. There's scuttlebutt that they're investigating to me to see if, you know, through Bezos and Kindle. That's how they discovered me with 137 books up there, and also look into my past, which you know, I mean, you know, people, you try and get into your computer, and the protection against people keep you from going in. Every time I want to go work on the website, it's like a 20-minute thing. I've loaded a program in one of my computers. 4 hours later, I'm still screwing around with it. It's asking me for this and this code and that code. Do you forget this? And do you know this? And here are three questions and all this kind of stuff. To fix my website? Give me a break. Anyway, you know, why do something simply so that you can make it very complicated and everything? Just think about Congress. You know, if Congress was in the real world of business, it wouldn't be in business. I mean, you know, like Matt Gaetz, you know. I don't know about Bondi, but I think they're going for the same spot or something. And Gaetz is going to be a special prosecutor or something like that. If I was doing something wrong, I wouldn't want that locomotive coming down the tracks at me. Gaetz is fearless, you know, and I don't think we're done with Gaetz. I think it's sort of like a battleship, you know. If you're trying to, you know, shoot down some ducks for dinner, you don't use the 12 incher. You know, you use maybe one of the pop guns, one of the pom poms or something like that, and vaporize the ducks that way. Well, this is kind of like Holden Gaetz, who's the 12 incher, you know. One of the main turrets, you know, with where you take something that weighs close to like 300 pounds or something like that, and you can send it 1,500 yards, like what the Bismarck did to the British battleship, just blew it out of the water. Unbelievable. With my series 22 Tango and my other series, the King's Destroyers, talk about these things. So anyway, you know how I go. I sing a song. Breakfast catching up to me. I'm going to sign off, but I do my little song and then give you love and kisses. So here we go. Da 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 da